And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers.
Just brutal radio.
Just horrible.
Live.
41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
This is Softy and Dick.
Oh, here we are. A beautiful Friday. Oh, it's tough getting off the golf course today, I'll tell you that. What a day outside in Seattle, Friday afternoon. Hoping you're getting out of work, getting in your car right now, listening to the show. Going to get home and relax a little bit, maybe get out on the deck, crack open a beer. This is certainly the day for it. We are here at the Queen Anne Beer Hall, which, by the way, they do have outdoor dining here. You can go outside at the Queen Anne Beer Hall and enjoy the beautiful sunshine. And we are here because our friends at Varsity House Podcasts are here tonight. They're doing a podcast at 7 o'clock. Our guy Sean Crawford, who runs Varsity House Podcasts throughout the country, is here in Seattle today. Because a couple of friends of his, including a former teammate at Notre Dame named Julian Love, as well as friend Draymond Jones, are going to be on the podcast tonight at 7 o'clock. So get on down to the beer hall. They'll be here about 5:30 or so. They'll be signing autographs, meet and greet. You want to meet the two big time, two new members of this Seattle Seahawk revamped defense, come on down to the Queen Anne Beer Hall. See us, see Sean, see Julian Love, see Draymond Jones, and there'll be music as well all night long. They'll be doing the podcast beginning at 7 o'clock tonight, but they'll be here for the meet and greet even before that. That's why we are here. Hugh Breedlove-Millen joins us. Huey, how you doing, man?
Good. Happy Friday to you and everybody.
Oh, yeah. You know, Fridays are always nice, but they're especially nice when it's like 70 degrees, sunny. First weekend of June, driving here, you could kind of, you know, I drive by the waterfront on the way to work to every day, and it's starting to look like the waterfront is starting to look like a beautiful waterfront instead of a construction zone catastrophe like it's been for like the last 2 or 3 years during the summer. It looks starting to look good. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of people walking the waterfront from end to end. So it's very, very cool. And, you know, I was talking to Ian Hugh in this last segment about the future of college football, more specifically for us, the future of the Pac-12, and really the linchpin, as we have heard from numerous sources, including Brett McMurphy, who joined the show a couple of weeks ago, who said that, hey, you got to watch for Colorado and Arizona. There is your first domino to fall. If there's somebody going to the Big 12 right away, it's Colorado and Arizona. And so when the Big 12 commissioner speaks at the Big 12 spring meetings, which was held not very conveniently in West Virginia, so they're sending everybody out to West Virginia for the Big 12 meetings. But when Brett Yormark speaks, the commissioner of the Big 12, I think we here on the West Coast have to listen right now because of that domino effect. And here's what Brett Yormark had to say today about expansion.
We have some guiding principles, you know, when we think about expansion. I mean, it's all strategic here. And at the top is the academic alignment and the leadership and the cultural fit and the geography and the athletic performance and the upside that a potential institution has as they would potentially, you know, join the Big 12. And we think about all those things as a collective group, and we discussed all those guiding principles this week. So hopefully that helps kind of framing for you and crystallizes for you how we're thinking about it.
Some of the other quotes from Brett, that was a good meaty one right there. He says, we love our current composition. However, if the opportunity presents itself to create value, we will pursue it. He goes on to say that all the athletic directors and presidents had great discussions about expansion, and the league will consider all options. We have a plan. And then he talked about potentially got teams like Gonzaga and Connecticut as basketball powers. We do believe in the upside of basketball moving forward as a collective group. We think it's undervalued, and there's a chance for us to double down as the number one basketball conference in America. But we do know that football is the driver. We all know that. So, yeah. Hugh, I mean, how serious? Let's start the conversation here. How seriously do you take these words from Brett Yormark?
Well, I think a lot of it is just boilerplate type of conference commissioner type of talk, right? Like, you know, all the stuff about, okay, academic prowess and
that sort of stuff. Yeah, you can gloss by that.
That he, when he enumerated the list or criteria, and I mean, there's no surprise there, right? I'm not sure that there was any kind of smoking gun in his comments that made me go, wow. I think the Big 12, my assumption is the Big 12 has got their head on a swivel, right? They acquired West Virginia. They've lost obviously Texas A&M, and they've lost Texas, right, to the SEC. So I would assume that they are going to be players, you know, in the marketplace. And so I'm not sure that he said anything there that pushed me to think anything different than that.
He has been the most aggressive commissioner in the country as far as being willing to talk about expansion. The Big Ten has really, they have leaned more on the, hey, we're happy with where we are right now. If expansion presents itself in the future, we will look to that. The SEC's kind of been the same. Hey, we don't need to do anything. We're good. So Brett Yormark has set himself apart from these other commissioners in how aggressive he's talked about it. And there's a reason for it. I truly believe that the Pac-12 conference is a sinking ship. It's a sinking ship that, as a traditionalist, I would love to see a plan to salvage, but I don't think a plan exists to salvage this conference, particularly for teams like Washington and Oregon. I don't think there's a roadmap to national prominence for Washington and Oregon if they are in the what will be constituted the new Pac-10, even if they've got more schools in it. I think taking USC and UCLA away diminishes the Pac-12 to near Mountain West standards, at least in sports. Certainly not in academics, but we're not talking academics right now. We're talking sports. It's not going to be the Mountain West. It's going to be a step above the Mountain West, but it's not going to be a big step above the Mountain West. And when you look at the perception from the rest of the country, we talked about this a little bit yesterday with Softy. When you look at the perception of what the Pac-10 will be from Alabama's of the world and Texas's of the world and Ohio's of the world and the Michigan's of the world, it's gonna seem like the Mountain West. Because if you're an Alabama fan, what's the difference between Oregon State and Nevada? Anything? I mean, we've always grown up as there's a big difference between a Pac-12 school and a Mountain West school. But what's the difference now? What will be the difference in your mind if you're not Washington or Oregon and you're just one of the other rank and file of the Pac-12? What's going to be the difference in the minds of the SEC of your conference and the teams in your conference?
Well, I just think you go back to just a couple of years ago. What was the reputation of the Pac-12 when they had when it had USC and UCLA, and it was as low as it's ever been.
Correct.
And so now, you're talking about it's either a sinking ship or it's a ship that's had, you know, a wrecking ball taken to it. I guess it's still floating, but maybe the whole top of I mean, yeah.
Water's coming in, man. And it's not a trickle.
I mean, it's salvageable, but I mean, I suppose you could have Colorado go to the Big 12 if they think that there's some Dion appeal in Arizona because primarily a basketball driver. And then you could have a Pac-8. You're probably old enough to remember the Pac-8, barely.
Barely. I mean, I was alive when it existed, but I really don't remember the conference until it became the Pac-12.
Right.
Or basically the Pac-10.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that right now the Pac-12, you know, West Coast football has blown up. It doesn't exist. In my opinion, West Coast as an aligned conference, you had basically a century of an alliance there. And if you look at the history of the Pacific Coast Conference and then the Pac-8 and the Pac-10, 12, every time that there's been an alliance of West Coast football for a century, USC and UCLA have been married to all of the four Northwest schools. And so that has constituted, I mean, Pacific, it's right there in the name, Pacific Ocean. Like all those three states that are on the Pacific Ocean have always had an alliance in football. And so now you take out USC and UCLA, and to me, it just it's like a divorce.
Yeah,
it's like you can have nice memories of your marriage, and you got kids, and you're grateful for that. I guess that would be the conference titles you've had, and the 91. I mean, that's like your proud kid, right? I mean, there's a product of that arrangement, that marriage. Right. And then now that marriage doesn't exist. And so I'm just kind of like, okay, that's a sign of the times. Move on. Right now, Washington has got to act in their own best interests. And the idea of trying to help salvage West Coast football, sorry, West Coast football doesn't exist to me.
And I'm wondering what's best for Washington financially, because we're talking about, when Brett McMurphy was on with us, he said Washington and Oregon are already in a desperate state right now. If Colorado and Arizona announce they're going to the Big 12, the level of desperation for Washington and Oregon becomes much greater, which means the Big 10 would probably be able to snap them up for less of a cost, because they are so desperate. So the Big Ten could offer whatever percentage, let's just make up a number, say 80%, and say, all right, if the Big Ten wanted to bring Washington and Oregon in right now at an 80% share of what the rest of the Big Ten schools are getting for 5 years, let's say, well, that number would, they could probably push that number down to 70% or 60%. If Colorado and Arizona were to leave. So as a Husky fan, I'm wondering, okay, what is the best for my school in the short term? Is the best for my school to just be the kings of the hill with Oregon in this crappy little conference, get to a college football 12-team playoff once every, the Huskies go once every 3 or 4 years, Oregon goes once every 3 or 4 years, maybe some random school in the conference goes once every 3 or 4 years, because you're probably only going to have one from the Pac-10 go every year to this conference, because it's not going to be strong enough to have more than one, likely. And then when the next TV deal expires and we move into this mega expansion mode, would that be best for my school? Or what would be best for my school is just no. Colorado, Arizona leave now. Hey, my school's desperate for a few years, but I get into the Big Ten early because the Big Ten sees an opportunity to poach the two biggest Pac-10 brands and take them to their conference at a reduced rate. They get Washington and Oregon at 60%, 65% of value for a good half decade. That, to me, seems like a pretty good deal for the Big Ten if Washington and Oregon are eventually going to end up there anyway.
Yeah, I think that however you nuance the scenario, I think that ultimately Washington will be better off in the Big Ten. I think that they'll be...
In the short term, like now versus being
all terms. I think that,
okay,
that USC and UCLA, I think you're going to get a lower quality of recruit. If in a Pac-12, a Pac-10 now, without USC and UCLA, I think that you're going to get a higher quality of recruit. I'm just focused on football right now, but I'm sure that the same holds for basketball. But I think that if you are in that conference, I think now you're playing with the big boys in terms of recruiting, and you're going to be a better team.
Yes.
Than if you we're in the conference now. That's a little bit separate from the debate about, well, you have a better chance of making the tournament if you're the one representative from the pack versus the one of three or four from
Correct.
The Big Ten, right? I mean,
that's about the numbers game.
There, an argument does exist. Look, I'm leaning one way, but I'm not blind to the argument that it. you've got this watered-down version of Pac-10 football, right? But if you're the best in that, you could, in theory, you could recruit as well as you would in the Big Ten, just because you're almost like the way Gonzaga does in Western Conference basketball. You're almost, and I know that's a more extreme example here.
Well, and it's harder you only have to recruit five or six good guys in basketball.
Yeah. I mean, right. But if you're talking about a Pac-10 that more or less resembles some type of Group of Five conference, mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of a Group of Five team, whether it's Houston
look at Cincinnati made the Final Four a couple of years ago, and that's what I think Washington would be. I think Washington would be, they get to the tournament and they become like Cincinnati and they just get their doors blown off by an SEC school or Big Ten school because of the reason you just brought up, that their recruits are just not as good if they're in this conference versus if they're a third-place team in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
They're getting Big Ten recruits then.
And that's what I think is likely to happen. I don't think you can just dismiss the chance that if Washington were to be a perennial powerhouse, just proven to have this domination over the conference, which that's a big leap. Now all of a sudden you got to say, well, you've got to somehow just rest the dynamics at work that has allowed Oregon to be Oregon for the last several decades. You got to somehow just dismiss their threat, but their presence, I should say. But if you somehow say Washington's going to dominate this new West Coast football conference, it's possible that you could have as good of recruits in that scenario as you did. Again, using Gonzaga as an extreme example. What are they? They're an elite team that wins their conference every year, in a poor conference, and they've somehow risen above the. It's almost as if they're Teflon. The reputation of their conference doesn't even stick to them.
But I don't think it's possible in football. I mean, the best you can get in football is like what Boise State's done, and Boise State, they beat Oklahoma one time when Oklahoma didn't care in a big time bowl game. But Boise State wins their conference. They're top 10, 15 team, and then every time they go to a big bowl game, I think that's the Washington would just be a better looking Boise State, wouldn't they?
Well, I mean, Boise State's fallen off a little bit. Fresno State won it last year,
right?
But I understand when Boise State was flying high. Is that the best you could hope for? Well, Boise State's recruits have never been where Washington would be.
That's right.
But I think that's somewhat of a cautionary tale. But I think Washington would still be, in this scenario, they'd be getting better recruits than Boise State. I don't want to lump them in there. But I understand you're saying, okay, are they more like Boise State, or are they more in football? Or are they more like Gonzaga in basketball? Or is it something in between?
Right.
But as far as the roster makeup, I think it's far more likely, I would say I have a 75-80% conviction on this claim. The roster of your team, if you could clone the Huskies, you got the Big Ten version, 3-4 years into assimilation into the Big Ten, and you've got the Pac-10 version. So you got two different universes, right? One is the universe where Washington's in the Big Ten, and then and in the parallel universe that you have a Washington in the Pac-10. Now, you somehow let those two play one another, the Big Ten version is going to beat the Pac-10 version.
I agree with you. 100%.
They have a better roster. There'll be more NFL prospects. I think that they'll be more steeled and hardened, do their competition. They'll be a better tournament team and what have you. Now, it is possible that the Pac-10 version, if somehow you become the Gonzaga of Pac-10 football, and you're getting as good a recruits, and players just don't care that you're not in the Big Ten, that could happen. But I would say there's maybe a 25% chance of that happen, 75% chance of the other.
When we come back, I want to ask you a question that Ian asked me on the air last week, I believe it was, and it got me thinking. I had a jump answer, and then I changed my mind during the break. I want to see what your answer to this question is, and we've got much, much more for you. Steven Sousa at 4 o'clock today, PJ Carlissimo at 6, Draymond Jones, Julian Love will join us between 5:30 and 6. We're live from the Queen Anne Beer Hall here on 93.3 KJR FM.
You can stream us at 93.3KJR.com on the free iHeartRadio app or the old-fashioned way on your radio as Seattle's only FM sports station in crystal clear stereo. Now back to Softy and Dick on Sports Radio 93.3KJR FM.
Live from the Queen Anne Beer Hall in Seattle, Dick Fain here, Hugh Breedlove Millen, Jackson Feltz back at the studios, which is only, it's probably Hugh's driver away. I can't get there with a driver. Hugh could probably get there with a driver if he teed up here right in the Beer Hall parking lot and hit a ball down the down Elliott Avenue to 645 Elliott. But hey, Jackson, right before the show started, did you hear Dave Softy Mulder's promo on this movie that's come out today, The Boogeyman?
I try to tune Softy out to literally whatever he's saying in life. No, but I did hear, Dick. It was good.
You know, and it got me. Sometimes you're sitting around getting ready to do a show, and you hear Softy say you got to check out this the trailer to this Boogeyman movie that's coming out tonight. So I did.
Oh, yeah?
And I could – I mean, if you're a horror fan – this is for you. This is absolutely for you. I was freaking out. I had the hair was standing out on my arms by like 30 seconds into this trailer. So it comes out today.
Really?
You got to see it in theaters, the big screen. Don't wait. Don't wait till it comes out on your TV screen in 6 months. See it in theaters, but do not see it alone. I'm just warning you. You gotta like have somebody that you can grab onto or
whatever. Did you have to grab the bartender?
Yes, I did. She looked at me very, very strangely when I did it. But yeah, Sophie Thatcher from Yellowjackets in it. Chris Messina from Air, which I just watched Air last
week. So
good. Very good movie. Vivian Lyra Blair from Obi-Wan Kenobi. You and I have seen that.
Yeah.
David Mastmalchian from Suicide Squad, and it's from the producers of Stranger Things. So good stuff, nice. And it's coming out tonight, so you got to see it in theaters. We are here until 7 o'clock tonight. Varsity House, by the way, is here. That's why we are here today. Varsity House Podcast presenting Seattle Seahawks meet and greet. So Julian Love's going to be here. Draymond Jones is going to be here. They're going to join the show between 5:30 and 6. So Hugh and I are going to have a chance to chat with two of the big-time additions to the new revamped Seattle Seahawks 2023 defense. But, Hugh, I teased in the last segment I was going to ask you a question that Ian asked me on the show during Crosstalk last week. And he basically said, hey, if you've got a sizable amount of money that you wanted to invest in your favorite school, mine being the University of Washington, he asks, would you put that investment, you're a sports fan and you want to help athletes, you want to help your team get better in sports, would you invest that sizable amount of money in the Tyee Club to better overall help the athletic department, or would you put that money into Montlake Futures and have it go directly into the NIL program at the University of Washington to help pay players that are playing for your team? I want to hear your response, and then I'll tell you what I said, my knee-jerk reaction, and then my after further review action. I went behind the hood, and I looked at the replay, and I decided that my first reaction wasn't exactly the one I wanted to stick with.
Okay.
So how would you answer that question? You know, University of Washington, whatever you want to donate money to, the Montlake Futures or to the Tyee program, and which would be a better use of your money to make that football team better?
What's the end game?
The end game is that you want your dollar to have the most impact to make your team better. Let's just say it's football. And you want to make your football team better. Would you donate to the football program in general, the Tyee Club, the ruling body of where the funds go, or directly into Montlake Futures and why?
Yeah, I think that you have more of a chance of impacting winning in football if you donate to Montlake Futures.
Okay, why is that?
Well, I think if you just kind of follow the money trail. If you donate to the Tyee Club, how is that directly benefiting the football team?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, so unless you're specifying, if you say, okay, football only, well, in what sense is that football only could be the coaches.
Right.
Right. Which
sure.
Now you could say, look, Ryan Grubb is going to help your football team. So if you've donated extra and that means you can pay $2 million to Ryan Grubb, I'm not saying that money that is donated to the Tyee can't help make your football team a more winning team. But I think that it's more likely to get watered down.
Gotcha.
And that... I think that your the percentage of the dollars that you have that are going to a material difference, I think you're more likely to have that money make a material difference with Motley Fool.
That was my exact knee-jerk reaction, which was yours. And then after further review, after a little bit of prompting from Ian, where he said, well, wait a second. What if you donate it to NIL and you got four recruits in the class of 2024? You got a five-star, you got a couple of high four-stars, and Montlake Futures is guaranteeing them deals, and your money is going into those deals. And that five-star plays for 1 year or doesn't even play at all and decides, nah, I'm going to go someplace else. And or he plays, let's say he plays 1 year and your money went to this kid to play 1 year. He was a freshman, didn't do much. And then transfer. So that's the name that I was thinking of. I wasn't going to put it out there, but you did.
Yeah.
It was Savelle Smalls, and you gave him a bunch of money.
Why wouldn't he be afraid?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. He was a high-profile kid that didn't end up doing anything for the University of Washington. So you give it to him, he plays, he does nothing for you, and then he moves on the next year. I would feel like my money was completely wasted if that was the case. So I kind of gradually changed over to the Tyee Club. Now, how would you react to Ian's kind of prompting me that direction?
Well, if you consider a worst case scenario for where your money goes, and that's a worst case scenario where your money has no effect, then I could see how you'd be persuaded. But could you not also concoct a reasonable scenario, worst case scenario, where you donate to Tyee and it doesn't have any impact on winning whatsoever?
Yes, I guess if you specified that money go to the football program, you would just assume that something good is coming out of my money for the football program. Maybe it doesn't directly translates into wins, but maybe it indirectly translates into wins. Whereas this goes to one particular kid, he plays for 6 months, he's no good, and then he takes off. So I would feel like it would be a little bit more of a waste that way.
Well, you might give the money to a bad coach. I mean, maybe the money would have gone to Junior Adams because you think you needed to get Junior Adams, and then all your money, and then you didn't realize that you could have improvement had you not given that money. So
that's
now
fair.
All of a sudden you're sitting there going, "Oh wow, my money went to I donated $5,000, and that $5,000, if you could somehow track that, that was earmarked all towards Junior Adams, and then you realize after the fact you didn't know it, it was unwittingly at the beginning, and you say, you know what, that $5,000 was not appropriated in a way that benefits the team. It actually was the most counterproductive $5,000 that I could have spent because we retained somebody that we turned out that there was somebody else for less money that's far better.
Yes, or that
a
money
more
goes...
loyal, more competent coach that has made the receiving core tougher, more competent, what have you. So if you want to compare, like, okay, you know, there's reasonable blue sky, there's pie in the sky blue sky, there's worst case scenario, there's abject disaster worst case scenarios. If you want to try and compare apples to apples on each scenario, you can find, but don't try and compare worst case scenario in an NIL allotment versus a reasonable or even a blue sky allotment from a Tyee donation.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. 340, 93.3 KJRFM. Dick Fain, Hugh Breelove-Millen from the Queen Anne Beer Hall. Fun with audio. And Jackson tells me not just one Charles Barkley cut, because what's better than one Charles Barkley cut is two Charles Barkley cuts. And fun with audio coming up next, 93.3 KJRFM.
It's now time for Softy and Dick's Fun with Audio.
Jimmy G, porn star Jimmy, Mr. Garoppolo.
Now, let's have some fun with audio.
Hugh's favorite segment, Fun with Audio. We do it every day at 3:45. Let's get to it right here. Hey, Hugh, did you hear that?
What's that, Dick?
13 years ago today, that would be 2010, June the 2nd, perfection was nearly achieved for the Detroit Tigers. Remember this?
26 up, 26 down. Here comes number 27. Ground ball, right side. Cabrera will cut it off. Galarraga covers. He's out. He is safe. He is safe at first base. Oh, my goodness.
Did he miss the base? He's out. Why is he safe? Oh, my goodness, Jim Joyce. No.
Oh, jeez Louise.
Oh, my goodness.
What a travesty. What an absolute travesty.
Jim Joyce. Jim Joyce, and he did the unthinkable, evidently. He approached Armando Galarraga to admit his error. Doesn't give him the perfect game, but a perfect game wiped out by a blown call at first base by Jim Joyce, Hugh. Oh, ho, ho.
Yeah. But what was the video replay?
He was out.
Out by a mile.
Out by a long, yeah.
And the first base, and there was nothing they could do.
Nothing they could do.
No review.
Nowadays, we would have had a perfect game, right?
Yeah.
We would have had a perfect game with a video replay. But Armando Galarraga.
Hey,
I mean,
quick thought on perfect game.
Yeah.
There was a time when I was a kid just figuring out the vernacular of sports and what have you. I can remember somebody said, okay, there's a perfect game. When it first came into my consciousness, I was probably like 7. Yes, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there. And I remember thinking, wait a minute, if he had a ball, if there was a ball, how could it be a perfect game? And it just drove me crazy that they could call that a perfect game if you had a ball.
If you had a ball. Well, I guess you could use a ball to help get
that's not
you
perfect.
A strike.
Well, I guess there is a word for that. It's called immaculate.
Immaculate innings with nine straight strikes.
So really? if you had a whole game of strikes, then you'd call it an immaculate game.
Immaculate game. Because there has been immaculate innings thrown where it's just 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. Three strikeouts, that's it. 9 pitches.
Well, if you had an infinite amount of time, you'd have an infinite number of immaculate games.
Yeah, you would. If we played baseball for the next 5 million years, we would have some.
No, that's finite. If you played infinitely, you'd have an infinite number.
That's true.
Perfect games.
By the way, before we go to this next guy, you know what else happened on June the 2nd? So we had the near perfect game there. June the 2nd, 1990, I was at the Kingdome when Randy Johnson threw the first ever no-hitter in Mariner history, and it was one of those games that you had no idea Randy Johnson had a no-hitter because he had runners on base all freaking game long. He hit guys. He walked guys. He was working out of jams, and all of a sudden you look up in the top of the eighth inning. I think it was at least the seventh, if not the eighth, when there was kind of a murmur that went through the crowd kind of all at the same time when we just kind of looked up. It was like one of those things. Somebody looks up and sees 0 on the hits line for the Detroit Tigers and then, like, nudges their partner, and then they nudge their partner, and then all around the place. And it just got – it went from just kind of a normal baseball crowd to a kind of, you know, edgy baseball crowd. And it stayed that way until the ninth, and he got Mike Heath on that high fastball, so I was able to see the first no-hitter in Mariner history. Also on June 2nd, Ken Griffey Jr. drafted by the Seattle Mariners. June 2nd, 1987.
Oh, okay. Oh, so, all right, history. Well, If we have some time, I got a Randy Johnson story for you involving a game like that or a situation. But I know we're in the middle of this.
All right. Hold on to that. We'll definitely go to that. All right. Jackson promised not one, but two Charles Barkley cuts. Last night on NBA
TV. What's that, Dick?
You
missed it, Dick. You missed it. I had to hit it.
Hey, last night on NBA TV before game one, Charles Barkley reacted to Shannon Sharpe being bought out by Fox Sports and leaving his undisputed show with Skip Bayless.
You know, I don't do social media, so I get all my information off Bleacher Report.
Uh-huh.
I read an article today.
You read something?
I did.
Okay.
If you work with a damn idiot, they'll buy you out. So, if you, I'm saying, I read
Chuck,
it. I
Chuck,
thought.
Chuck, Chuck.
I'm just saying. I'm saying to you, Shaq, it's not you. It's not you. It's not you. Okay. It's not Ernie. It's Kenny. But apparently, if you work with a damn idiot, they'll buy you out. Okay. So I just want y'all to know, I'm open to the bow.
Skip Bayless wants to talk to Charles Barkley on his show. It doesn't sound, based on that cut, like Skip Bayless is ever going to get Charles Barkley on his show.
Nope.
To talk to him, does it?
No. I was a little confused on that, so I'm on a pass. I love Charles Barkley. I think he's on the Mount Rushmore of colorful athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even number two behind Muhammad Ali. So I'm buying everything that Barkley's selling. But for me to buy it, I got to understand what it was.
Well, Skip Bayless and Charles Barkley have had a long-standing feud. And Shannon Sharpe, reports are, have had either, you know, something happened with him and Fox, or he's just had enough of Skip Bayless and wants out. And so Charles, in reporting that news story, is taking a shot at the guy he doesn't like in Skip Bayless.
Calling him an idiot.
Calling him an idiot. Saying, if you work with an idiot, that you get
well,
out of
it. It was
you
an odd pairing from the jump, right?
Yes.
Skip Bayless and
well, you know Shannon Sharpe well, so, I mean.
I do. And I think the world is Shannon Sharpe. And so I don't know Skip Bayless, but I think Shannon was spectacular in that.
I thought he was very good.
I think he's very well prepared. He, you know, his depth of knowledge. I think he argues creatively and thoughtfully. And so, yeah, I'm a big Shannon Sharpe guy.
Absolutely. Hey, Hugh, did you hear that?
What's that, Dick?
Later in the NBA TV pregame show, Charles Barkley was asked if he believes the altitude in Denver, Colorado plays any factor for opposing teams facing the Nuggets.
The Mile High City, 5280 above sea level.
Every time they miss, I think it's the stupidest thing ever. No, it's true. It ain't true.
It's true.
I don't believe it's true.
So what? You weren't playing hard enough, man.
You know, the reason I don't think it's true, I just don't remember all those Denver Nugget championships. This first time they ever been to the finals. So to act like this, they got a good damn team. Listen, these guys are the best athletes in the world. The notion that breathing going to dictate who wins. Like I say, if that was the case, the Nuggets would have been, this is the first time they've been to the finals. And all of a sudden now, altitude matters. Give me a damn break.
We might have to save that cut. Like, give,
come
me a,
on, Charles,
give me a damn
come
break.
On, you're
Charles.
Smarter than that.
Is he? Well, you played in Denver?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah.
I
played in Denver as a visiting member. I played in Denver as a Bronco. Charles Barkley, I don't think he's reasoning through that well. The altitude is a factor. It's not going to have immense gravity. And if you've got a lousy team for 50 years, the altitude is not going to overcome having a lousy team. The question is, when you have a really, really good team, and the Nuggets are at least that, and you're trying to find just minute differences, right? Can the altitude be a factor? And I don't think there's any question that the altitude's a factor. I mean, you just when you play there, coming from sea level, you just kind of feel a little bit lethargic, kind of like you know, at the onset or at the very end of a flu, you just your body just doesn't have that same energy.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt it impacts the shot, but I can remember in pregame warmups just feeling like, okay, ball comes out of me. We played the Broncos early December, right? So you're in, quote, midseason form. And pregame warmups, the ball comes out of my hand, and I'm thinking, okay, that's on. I'm throwing a go route up the left sideline. I can remember it vividly. I could even tell you what side of the field I'm on. And I kind of, it was Irving Fryer and a couple other guys, and I just kind of overthrew him by like 2 feet. And I'm like, God dang, that felt good coming off my hand, right?
Thin
like,
air, yes, man.
Huh? And
thin air.
And it just, and then you do the calculations, and you know it does affect it by a few inches. And now I'm not sure, you know, those are balls that are traveling 55, 60 yards in the air. I don't know that on a 20-foot shot that it would matter. I'm assuming not much. It would be so marginal. I'm not going to ascribe anything there. But as to the fatigue, you get a great football, a great basketball team on your ass, and you're having to battle the altitude. Yes, it's a material factor.
Steven Souza coming up, talking Mariner baseball, the 4 o'clock hour, right after the top of the hour headlines. It was a very good day for the Huskies today. We'll tell you why next on 93.3 KJR FM.